everybody, to an all-new comedy at the Carlson Cast. That's CarlsonCast.com. At this rate, he'll be next year's Oscar host. Hashtag Oscar so fat. It's Vinny Bolito. He'll be vacuuming the red carpet. There's Brian Ball. He's the Meryl Streep of people who don't win anything. It's Ross Johnson. That's me. And of course, there's Bruce Vilanch. Today's episode, it's our special guest, Mr. Bobby Slayton.
Oh, never been more hurt.
Only
say
would
hashtag fat Oscars. Is that what that was?
Hashtag Oscars so fat.
Okay. Okay.
Try to coordinate on this.
With a PH. Hi, everybody.
No.
It's
no.
A comedy
no,
at the Carlson Cast.
With a hard F.
It's with a PH. It's with a PH. I'm Vinny Paulino, your host. That's stupid Brian Ball. Cam Tiller's in the back. Big one today. Bobby Slayton is coming in, the pitbull of comedy. Guy I have looked up to in the comedy business since I was a wee one.
Yes.
And
I think a lot of us have.
Holds a special place in my heart. He was the first person I ever got to host the show for.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, we talked about that last time. So it was fun to go back and watch that first episode. If you haven't seen it, it's in our archives on CarlsonCast.com. But we didn't talk anything about his history, about how he got into the business. We didn't talk about anything. We just had a good time.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm kind of...
There's unexplored territory.
There's a lot of unexplored territory here. And what I think is going to be fascinating, because I want to know how a kid grows up to be him. That's what I want to know. I want to know how a kid grows up and
exactly
turns into Bobby Slayton. Which horror do you go through?
Occurred, yeah.
No,
he's a
no
nice
horror.
Guy. He's a nice guy.
He is a great guy. So I'm excited about that. We have been off for 2 weeks, and I owe you all an apology. We thought we were going to be back. Then I was a little bit sick, and then Carlos Mencia was here, and then we all pretended to be a little sick. And we're back this week, so we're pretty excited about that.
I actually was sick the next day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
I can't come in this day.
And you were cardigan shopping, apparently.
Yes, I was looking for cardigans. You know what? It's funny. I am technically in second place for the oldest-looking dressed person in here.
Yeah,
Ross put it perfectly when you walked in this morning. He goes, Brian looks like he's been out beating newsies.
It's not full without my coat, but yeah, I could get that. Yeah.
Hey, Paul was running late from the diner.
Yeah.
So,
they got to get that. Gotta get the early bird special.
Yeah, let's not forget that the text line is open if you want to text in some questions for Bobby, 585-484-0265. And if you are watching this, we really, truly thank you for that if you're listening. Make sure you hit subscribe. Make sure you review. It means a lot to us. So that being said, let's move right into the important stuff today, and let's talk about our amazing sponsors. Shall we, Brian?
Yes, we shall.
All right. Let's start with number one in my hearts and mainly on the list. It's Sapori, baby. Sapori Cafe and Catering, located inside the Powers Building atrium, or you could have them cater your very own special event. Let me tell you, I went there for lunch last week with our old pal Brian McBride. Clam chowder, out of this world.
Were you actually with my Brian McBride, or were you just sitting next to one of those trees that's in the atrium?
I always get confused. I can never tell.
Yeah.
At Sapori Rochester on Facebook and Instagram. And like I said, you can have them cater your very own special event. And if you are going to have a holiday party here at Comedy at the Carlson, make sure you mention to Mark that you want Sapori to cater it, because they will take very, very good care of you. Next, Three Heads Brewing.
Mm-mm.
Now, I got to tell you something. I was at the East Ave Wegmans this morning at 5 a.m. And I bought the very last case of that.
And they wouldn't sell me alcohol.
I don't like wheat.
Oh, man.
But you know, last night I had the Grolsch.
What's the Grolsch?
It's a like German style they make, and it's freaking fantastic.
Yeah.
I have to say.
All I know is it can't be Friday night quick enough so I could have a little bit of this hippie holiday gingerbread wheat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'd have to wait till Friday night.
Because it's morning, you alcoholic. That's why I have to wait till Friday night.
It works the same in the morning as it does in the evening.
Interesting tip. Drink responsibly, ladies and gentlemen.
I need a little hair of the dog.
And let's get to our other sponsor here, our good friends at Iron Smoke Whiskey, Applewood Smoked Whiskey, and Rattlesnake Rosie's Apple Pie Whiskey, available now wherever fine liquor is sold. Or you could visit and learn more about them at ironsmokewhiskey.com. Or You could visit them down on Pace Avenue down there in Fairport and go check out their new tasting room. Either way, Iron Smoke Whiskey, it'll get you drunk.
Get the apple pie. Taste festive on Christmas Day, and you can drown out your bad gifts that you're disappointed.
But remember, always drink responsibly and make sure you're over 21.
Yeah.
Cool.
Whatever.
So that being said, I also need to apologize to some people. There will be an announcement later today on when our next new comic night at Comedy at the Carlson is going to be. We did our last one 2 weeks ago. We haven't talked about it yet.
Fantastically.
Standing room, man.
Yes, yeah, standing room only.
Right. I think the crowd had a blast. The comics had a blast.
Yes.
We got a winner.
Yeah.
I think we got a winner here. So we're going to do another one. There was a date that was settled on, and then some conversation started happening about a possible better date that I think would be a little bit better for everybody,
okay,
comics included. So I'm waiting on one final little thing. I will know today when our show is going to be. So I apologize. I knew I said I was going to announce it today. I am not. I am a liar. Screw you. Screw
liar.
All of you. You get liar. Nothing out of me.
Liar.
It's coming soon, though.
Liar.
All right. So let's kick it over to a few words about our upcoming shows at Comedy at the Carlson, and we're going to be right back with the Pitbulls comedy, Mr. Bobby Slayton. Stay tuned. Hey, everybody. We got some big shows coming up at Comedy at the Carlson this winter. If you didn't know, next week we have Josh Wolf, December 13th through the 15th. Rob Little will be here December 20th through the 22nd. April Macy returns December 28th through the 29th. New Year's Eve with Ross Bennett, December 31st, 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. shows. Chris Franjola, January 10th through the 12th. Preacher Lawson, January 17th through the 19th. Vicky A. Barbalak from America's Got Talent will be here January 24th through the 26th. Bob Saget, February 21st through the 23rd. We're going to come on home with Samuel J. Comroe, April 18th through the 20th. That's right, big shows. Like I said, I wasn't lying to you. If you'd like to get tickets, call 585-4-COMEDY or call carlsoncomedy.com. Hope to see you at a show. And I am live. That's good. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I'm just making sure that you, the viewers and listeners, are updated on what's going on. Joining us in the studio, the man of the hour, Bobby Slayton, everybody.
Welcome back, sir.
Well, it's nice to be here. Nice to be back. Nice to be back in Rochester. Not so much nice to be here on your show, but to be actually back in Rochester. You know, it's funny, I've been coming for like 30 years, and, you know, Mark, who owns the club, Comedy at the Carlson, was showing me all these neighborhoods I never saw, that the Millionaire's Row or Eastman, you know, the houses.
Yeah.
I would live here in a second.
Yeah, we're in the high rent district over here.
It's beautiful. I mean, yeah. I would live here just for Wegmans because we have some great grocery stores in LA. I'm a big, not a great cook, but I like to cook a lot.
Right.
We have some great grocery stores. We have Gelson's and we have Whole Foods, of course. But Wegmans, as you know, makes those places look like 7-Eleven. You know? I can live, if I could have an apartment above Wegmans grocery store. Uh-huh. I remember the first time Weez took me there. He said, "Oh, you're going to love this grocery store." I go, "I live in LA. We've got the best grocery stores. How great can it be?" And you walk in there and it's mind-boggling.
But, you know, I think Wegmans is great. But what I think is really interesting is the reflex of all Rochesterians whenever somebody comes from out of town, they take them to Wegmans.
Well, where else
well, that's
go?
What I'm saying. That there's says a lot about here. The city.
There's a couple museums.
No, with, you know,
we have, like, there's that.
Yeah.
Well, if you're from Buffalo, it seems like a big town. But no. But when you live, you know, from New York and you live in Chicago and San Francisco, no, but people get a little jaded. So it's kind of, I don't know, what else should I see? Tony D's restaurant I love. Mama San's the best Asian food I've ever had in my life.
I concur with that. I love me some Mama San's.
So what else is
awesome.
Great here? Your podcast, of course.
Oh, thank you. Comedy at the Carlson.
Comedy at the Carlson.
More shows with Bobby Slayton.
Right.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Right. What else is good in here? I mean, the two things we're known for is Wegmans and a garbage plate, and that just isn't fun for anybody.
And I would say we have
Tennessee beer, which is just garbage. They're not one of your sponsors, are they?
No, they're not. No. Three Heads Brewing is, and they're delicious.
They're delicious. Yeah.
They're great.
I love it. You know, it's funny because I was talking to Mark about this. Just too many beers now. The beer it's become kind of gay with the raspberry flavors and the, you know, and all the infused with fruit. And just give me.
A nutty aftertaste. I'm not into it.
I'm the Heineken guy.
I used to walk into a bar and say, ask for a beer, and they say, "What do you want?" I say, "Surprise me." You can't do that anymore. No. You have no idea what the hell you're going to get.
But you know what?
Is that a strawberry in there?
Yeah.
But the clubs now, if you ask the club, the biggest selling beers are still Budweiser and Coors Light because people want middle of the road. Shit, you know, that's America. That's why Domino's still does well. I can understand where if there's nothing open and you live in the middle of nowhere, Domino's is perfectly edible. But when you come to a town that has great places, you know, people want familiarity and they want mediocrity.
Sure.
You go to the airport, and some of the airports now have these amazing, healthy, and delicious, not just craft beers, but little food chains, and yet the line to McDonald's is longer than all of them put together, you know?
It says a lot about American culture. I think, like, the whole Midwest just lacks its own culture because, like, everybody was just kind of traveling through to get to each coast. And, like, everybody who stayed, they're just like, well, we might as well make something.
Oh, this will do.
Yeah, this will do. This is good here.
It's mind-boggling to me. I mean, you go to any mall or mini mall and, you know, like I said, a couple of great restaurants, maybe even a Chipotle, a Pollo Loco, and there's people at Chick-fil-A and KFC, you know?
Yeah.
What a world.
Yeah, which is why one of the reasons I'm just so sick of doing stand-up comedy. Things are getting worse and worse and worse. The people out there are just, you know, these millennials. I know it's not like an old fart, you know, with your little man bun and your political correctness, you're douchebag.
So it's interesting that you brought that up because we are going to be talking a little bit later about the White House not having comedians at the Correspondents' Dinner. But we were also are going to talk a little bit about this. Who was the writer for Saturday Night Live? Who got thrown off stage at Columbia.
Weez was just talking about that on his radio show.
Oh, was he?
He told me the story. The Indian guy, Patel.
Yeah.
And, you know, he got thrown off the stage of this Asian alliance. The group, their comments were just, you know, abominable. I mean, they were so, not politically correct, but so straight-laced and everything, the antithesis of what stand-up comedy is. And look, sometimes I offend people. You watch Michelle Wolf at the Correspondents' Dinner.
Yeah.
She had some lines that made me wince a little, but she also had some very funny stuff, and she had a lot of balls to do that material. For people to get all bent out of shape about what she did, I can see if you were President Pumpkinhead why you wouldn't like it, but people, the most appalling thing I've ever seen, they're talking about it like it was footage from the Holocaust. They're talking about it like it was, it's just, and then, I mean, the human race has let me down on every level.
That's so sad.
It's gotten to the point where I get on a plane and I go, you know what, if this plane goes down, I don't mind dying just so these motherfuckers, just so I have to.
So they're all dead too.
Yeah,
I'll do the whole world will be better.
You know, I think a lot of the millennials that hate that, you know, they get so wound up about every little thing. First of all, I don't know where they get the time, but I think it's just that they don't have jobs, they have a ton of student debt, they live with their parents, but at least they hate the right things.
Yeah.
And that gets them through the day.
And it's not just millennials. It's a lot of them, a lot of people. By the way, how old are millennials? 20 to 30, 30 to 40?
Yeah, like late, like 20s to like, early 30s.
Yeah, I'm going early 30s down to like 18, 19.
Yeah, it's not all of them.
No,
you know? It's like saying, you know, all Asians can't drive or all black people talk in movie theaters, which is basically true, but not all of them.
Right, sure. But Small percentages, maybe 30%.
Most.
But I find a lot of older people, too. But I think older people know when they come to a comedy club. You know, I think anybody knows when they come to a comedy club what they're in for. You like to think that, but last night you were at the show, Vinny.
I was. Thank you for noting that I was on the show. I was more than just there, but thank you.
Well,
for
noticing. To me, you were just there.
I assumed.
Makes you feel better. You were on the show. You stole the show. You were really the headliner. I just went on second. Whatever you want to say, I don't really care.
No. I just wanted to make sure that you noticed that I wasn't just sitting there watching.
Last night was a particularly good show.
Yes, it was.
And it was, not you, me, but it was, it went really well, and everybody that was there, I didn't see everybody, but I think people either knew me or they were there to laugh, and they were there to, you know, it wasn't like watching a comic on Stephen Colbert. I can't even watch those 5-minute segments anymore. Most of those comics, and I don't know if it's all their fault, but just so bland because there's so many things you can't say on network television.
Yeah. It's interesting that you use the word bland. I was talking to some people about that this week. I feel like everyone's afraid to discover the line because the line keeps moving. So everyone's just terrified to try to tiptoe up to anything, and they're staying away from anything that could be deemed controversial. Well, and not just at colleges.
Yeah, I think, and I think last night I stepped way over the line, you know. You see what people are laughing at, and that's the idea of playing a club, you know, to try new stuff out and see how far you can push it sometimes. And there have been times where I've stepped a little too far over the line, but you can't walk the line if you're never going to step over the line. Sure. You got to make some mistakes. When you do stand-up comedy, you're never going to get any better.
I agree. And that's I think that's one of the things that people need to keep in mind, especially if you're going to get into comedy. You're going to screw up every now and again, but the fear for the new generation coming up is that those screw-ups have very serious punitive damage to the possibility of having a career starting out. Like, people don't just hear a joke they don't like or agree with and say, all right, next joke anymore.
Well, you know what it is? Look, for people starting out, first of all, there are way too many comedians to come up with anything new.
Should everybody that wants to do stand-up comedy do stand-up comedy?
I think, should anybody do it if they want to?
Sure.
Sure, if you want to do whatever you want to do. Sure. If you want to, think you want to be a Marine, go to boot camp. If you want to be a doctor, go to medical school. If it doesn't work out, you can do something else.
Sure.
But when people tell me they want to do stand-up, I always discourage them because I don't think it's like probably being a magician now. You know, you watch some really good ones. Like, you ever watch Penn & Teller show?
Oh, yeah.
You have these guys. You've never heard of them. They're all terrific. They're probably all making a living doing whatever they're doing. But I think for the most part, if you're going to start out doing magic, and I can't speak for magicians because I'm not a magician, you're going to probably wind up doing kids' parties and having a full-time job because I don't know how you're going to break into that and do anything that hasn't been done. That's why Penn & Teller, who I've known for a long time, have always fascinated me because they go on at the end of their show, you know, fool us.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And they'll do something after following these such creative magicians. And even Panatelli, even if they know how the guys did it, they'll say, well, it's a common trick, but you've put something, you've done this work with it that makes it, it's like the Aristocrats joke. Yeah. You're telling it in a new way. It's the same joke, it's the same trick, but they put a new spin on it.
Absolutely.
Which I think, so it's the same thing with stand-up comedy. I think if you want to break into it now, first of all, I don't know where you would begin to break into it, because I remember the clubs used to have, every club would have an open mic night, and every club would have an amateur night, and every club would have a little comedy contest. Whoever did well would get to open for the headliner that weekend, and I don't see any clubs doing that anymore. I don't know where people
go.
We
do.
Huh?
We do.
Oh, you do?
We do. Yeah. We do the funniest person in Rochester contest, usually over the summer.
That's good.
And we do a new comic night. We have another
one
coming
up. That's good. I didn't know comedy to cross the data, because most clubs I don't see doing that anymore.
Well, I had to twist a couple arms. Not going to lie to you. It took a little bit of work.
The other thing, too, is I think when you're starting out, and I remember, I'm trying to remember when I started out, because it's 40 years ago. I think when you're starting out, you know, you have 5 minutes, and you don't really want to play around. You want to do, you want to win that contest. Mm-hmm. You want to get a job. You know, that's why when I, you know, people used to go to the improv, the comedy store, and mess around. And when I would go to the comedy store, the improv, you know, I would do some of my best stuff because I wasn't there very often. Mm-hmm. I could try new material when I'm here in Rochester. I'm doing an hour, and I can throw in 5 or 10 minutes, so I can improvise or just screw around with the audience. But so I never used those clubs to just mess around, because I'd usually be following Jay Leno or Joe Rogan or whoever. A lot of great comics. So you don't want to go on and go, hey, I'm going to try some new stuff tonight. You want to be as good as the last guy.
Yeah, you want that crowd to remember. Yeah.
Right. Or you're some great comics in the audience. You want to be good for them. I mean, that's just how I work. So
that makes a lot of sense.
I don't know how guys really would. So, yeah, my whole point was, don't do stand-up comedy.
Right. So
don't
you're telling
your
me that if, like, you never had this career, if you never had the career that you had right now and you looked at comedy, you would just say, not for me?
I don't know what I would say now if I never had this career. I don't know, you know. Let's say if you had to start all over, what would you do? I don't know.
Sure.
Okay. I don't know what I would do. If I'm 63 years old, so I couldn't see starting comedy now, but, you know, I don't know.
How did you start comedy? Where did you, like, first step on stage?
There's a club called the Holy City Zoo in San Francisco, and I was 21 years old, and I was at a party, somebody's house, telling jokes. Not everybody sitting around listening to me. I was just telling some. I was a doorman at the Boarding House nightclub. A big club that's gone now.
Sounds prestigious.
The Boarding House is actually great. Steve Martin played there. No, Boarding House is really cool. And there was a doorman there, and Henny Youngman was there for a week. So I loved Henny Youngman. So I started telling these Henny Youngman jokes. Not take my wife, please, but my wife pulls into the kitchen. She's in the car, and she said, you know. So somebody said, you should do stand-up comedy. I was, you know what, I was also...
You're telling me Henny Youngman told you...
No. Somebody told me at this party that I should do it.
So this is like 74?
75. But I 76.
Yeah.
So what were you then, around 30, Brian?
I was a boy.
But you know what? I did it once, and then didn't do it again for another year. I don't know what happened in that year. So I tell people I started 22. I don't, because I'm trying to, a lot of it's kind of blurry.
That's fascinating. So you did it one time and then just didn't do it.
Yeah, you know what it was also? I was not only a doorman at the boarding house, but a friend of mine, Terry McGovern, who was a big, big morning radio show host at a very prestigious rock station, KSAN, one of the first progressive rock stations, along with, I think, CBN in Boston and XRT in Chicago and WNW in New York. They played freeform radio, played whatever they wanted to. These were all pioneers. So Terry had the morning show, and he played everything from a whole Rolling Stones album to a Monty Python bit, and Terry did stand-up comedy. So he was opening for Martin Mull for a week, and he said, look, I need somebody to put my water on stage and my notes, and I'll pay you $25, and Terry would have me on his show before I was even a stand-up.
So you're literally the water boy.
As a water boy, and Terry, here's what it was. I was, okay, it's all coming back to me now.
Okay.
I was 21 years old. I was a bike messenger in San Francisco, downtown. And I never rode the bike.
A lot of hills, not for me.
Yeah, but I never, no, just downtown, which wasn't that. But I walked around a lot, smoked dope. And Terry McGovern, you'd listen to him in the morning because his show was just so cool. Have all these great guests on, the Jake Giles Band if they were in town. So every Friday, he would do a talent contest on the street in front of the studio. So I walked by, and people would do you know, bird impressions and bird sounds and magic, whatever. And I ran up and did an impression of Al Jolson for some reason. You know why? Because I think it was Christopher Guest. They did a whole thing on the National Lampoon Radio Hour. It was on a record. They did it. So I did the character. Hey, it's me, Jolie. I'm feeling sick. Lou Dockstead, whatever.
Right.
And so I started doing it. So Terry had me come in the studio and do it, even though this wasn't my material. And then I just started saying funny things, and he put me on the air. And I don't remember how it all evolved. And then Terry and
So you're telling me your stand-up career started from you listening to a National Lampoon's album and doing an imitation of Al Jolson.
Well, no, it wasn't just that. And then working at the boarding house and seeing Henny Youngman. And you know, I wasn't planning on becoming a comic. You know, I was always a class clown. If you look at my father's home movies, you know, I'm doing the twist, and I'm pulling my pants down. My brother tries to get in the picture. I push him out of the way. And so it was all this stuff that I think I was always, you know, because I was never good at sports, never good with the girls, typical stand-up comic. And then, so I was just a class clown. I was sent away for the fake dog shit, and, you know, on April Fool's, always trying to do something, the dribble glass, I give a friend chocolate milk, and just what I was just a, you know, I think I was naturally born to do this, but it never crossed my mind to do it until somebody said you should become a stand-up comic. So anyway, I'm at this party telling jokes to somebody. You should try stand-up comedy. And I went to this club called the Holy City Zoo that had an open mic night, and I did it. I put together 5 minutes, and then I worked on it for a week. I remember walking around and riding the bike around, delivering stuff, trying to put together this. I still have it on tape, by the way, my 5 minutes.
Really?
It's on a cassette somewhere. It's awful.
You don't have a digital copy of it?
Yeah, I have a copy of it somewhere. And I don't want... But to me, it's like I should just get rid of it. I want people hearing it.
Well, so, no, I mean...
It's like having kiddie porn. Because... Somebody's going to find it when you die. You know, have women's underwear or kiddie porn. They might not find it now, but somebody's going to find it. So if you don't want anybody finding it, you should destroy it.
Well, when your daughter sells the rights to your life to somebody, they'll find
it. Yeah, they'll find it. No, it's somewhere... You know what? For a guy doing stand-up for the first time, I think with comics now... young comics starting out, they have it easier and harder in two ways. It's easier because there's a template out there. You can watch a million comics. Yeah. You can sit and watch Netflix, and you can see how to do this. It's almost like how to build a bomb. You know, it's all over the internet. Right. There's a million crappy comics on YouTube. There's a million great comics on television. And on the other hand, because of that, it's harder to do because, you know, developing a character and developing your own style.
When I started out, it's easy to just morph into somebody else.
Yeah, when I started out, I didn't really have a style or anything, and I was kind of like a prepubescent Jay Leno. My voice was not, hey, everyone, I kind of sounded like, and then I would watch Seinfeld and Jay, even though Seinfeld and I pretty much started out at the same time, he was a much better comic than I was ever when he was younger. I remember trying to do observational stuff like Jerry, not talk like him, but, you know, you ever walking down the street, you see, and I'd watch David Brenner, and I think every young comic, you know, you see every young black comic, when I was starting out, wanted to be either Cosby or Pryor, you know, you could see Cosby and Pryor in them. Not that they were stealing it.
Sure.
But I think every comic, you know, subliminally, subconsciously, I could be wrong, but I think when you guys were doing it, you know, you saw a guy you liked and you tried to be like him.
Yeah, I think when I was coming up, half of us were like Louis C.K.
Louis C.K., yeah, there's nothing wrong with that because, you know, and I see that. I see with some guys a little too much. I see a couple of guys open up for me and go, you're a big Brian Regan fan. Oh, he's my favorite comic. And you can see that by watching him.
Right.
And there's a few guys that are exactly almost like Seinfeld. And maybe that's their natural style. But, you know, looking at the sweater, and I say, and I'm going, it's the same inflection, the same cadence, the same rhythm. It's a little too much.
Maybe it kind of goes back to the psyche of the comedy consumer, the same reason they go to McDonald's. They like what they like, and they like to hear what they know.
Sometimes they might not know, you know. But a lot of actors are probably like that, too. You know, De Niro, and they want to be like Marlon Brando. And they, you know. I don't know. But so when I started out, you know, I don't know who I was doing or what I was doing. but it took a long time before it just became natural. What I do now is just me.
So maybe that's first why
my career has never really taken off, because I haven't imitated somebody much better. Right. Which maybe I will start doing now, and something good will come.
You should try some Seinfeld stuff tonight. Maybe throw a little bit in there. So, like, you did the first time. You did this first set, and obviously it went well enough that you went and did a second set, that you went and did a third set, and that we're sitting here now. How did you go over, you think?
Well, you know, I waited a year, and I met this girl, and I told her, she's my girlfriend for a while, and I trying to remember why I did it again or how I did it again. It took a year for me to go back up. I remember I went on in August, and then went back a year later, the same night as Dana Carvey. Mm. I think Dana and I started the same night, if not the same week. And I don't know whatever happened to that schmuck.
I heard Dana Carvey say that a while ago.
Really?
In an interview. Yeah, I think he did say his first night you were there. I think I remember him saying
that. Are you serious?
That. Yeah.
His first night I went on, it was, you know, the second time. Me and Dana started out. He was great then. It was funny, but we're still good friends.
Sure.
He became a really good comic. But, yeah, we started out together. And then the first time I went to the Comedy Store, you know, comics all went down to L.A. Was a young comic. And, you know, we weren't very famous. Famous at all. We went down to the Comedy Store and had to go on an open mic night and had to let Mitzi Shore see us.
Right.
And it was a Monday night, and they got in line very early, wanted to sign up very early for the Comedy Store. I was standing in line with Howie Mandel, who had just come down from Canada. And me and Howie had something in common because Howie was a carpet salesman and my father was in the carpet business.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, and Howie, Dana, gone. Where am I? On the Vinny Show, right here.
Welcome, baby. Hey. Glad you can make it. Dana Carvey doesn't return my phone calls. So.
And we bumped him for you.
Dana, you know what's interesting? Dana doesn't return a lot of calls. I call him, and he'll call me back eventually.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, don't sell yourself short, because you literally, you're a pretty great comic, man. You know that.
I'm a good comic, but I've been doing it for 40 years.
And the last time you were here, I kind of got sad after you left, because, like, really, truthfully, you're one of those people that I really admire in the business. And when you told me that you just, you know, felt like you wanted to slow down and not do as much, I kind of felt sad. But then you told me this summer that you took off for a while, and now you're back and you're feeling good about it.
Yeah, well, I feel great about it, actually. Well, the reason I was getting sick of it is because I was playing a lot of crappy comedy clubs.
Right.
Not comedy at the Carson.
Sure.
I mean, I love being here, and I love the hotel, and I love Rochester, you know, but I'm only here for 3 days. Another 4 or 5 days, I'd want to hang myself.
Sure.
But when I play these in Providence, Irvine, the San Francisco Punchline, you know, there's a handful of clubs. But what happened, unfortunately, and I know it's not me, because it happened to a few other guys, and I'm not going to drag them into this. The comedy business has changed. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't made it to a level like Lewis Black or Kathleen Madigan, I'm not talking about superstars, Kevin Hart selling out Yankee Stadium. Mm-hmm. I'm just talking about where you're playing theaters, mm-hmm. and you're making as much in a night as I make in a month. And I'm not angry or jealous. I mean, maybe a little jealous. But the comedy business can really start to wear on you.
Yeah.
When you're staying playing some shithole in the Midwest in front of a bunch of yahoos for half of what you used to make, because you don't really sell any tickets, because people my age aren't going to clubs like they used to. Mm-hmm. And people aren't going to clubs. Like, first of all, I would never go to a club because Netflix has a million comedy specials to watch. And I spent my life in nightclubs. And I'm not saying discouraging people from going.
Sure.
It's a great thing to do on a weekend. But so a lot of my fans, and there's so many millennials and young kids that are discovering comedy clubs for the first time. And they're going to see comics that they know from YouTube. And they're going to see comics that they've seen at colleges. And mm-hmm. they're going to see comics. So there's a whole new... So I've almost, because of my age, you know, a lot of clubs don't want to book guys my age, believe it or not. And they had a big comedy conference a few years ago. And they were talking about the fact that when millennials or young people see an old guy on stage and old people in the audience, they go, my daughter's like that. I don't want to go to the club with all these old people. We say people in their 50s. So to me, they're young people.
Right, right.
So the comedy business has changed. So I was wanted to slow down only because I was playing some shithole and staying, like I said, at a Holiday Inn in the middle of nowhere where there's, you know, nothing to eat but a Chick-fil-A across the street. And, you know, I just want to
and
be
it's
here.
Sunday.
It was weirdly, and the airline travel with the airlines and not, you know, not getting first class bump ups anymore and sitting between some fat guy. And just, you know, so the whole process was not fun.
Yeah.
You know?
And war on you.
And I've been doing this for a long, long time. And, you know, I love what Jerry Seinfeld says. He still loves doing stand-up comedy. Yeah, because he goes to Vegas, makes $1 million a weekend
in
his private jet yeah. and stays in the whole top floor of Caesars
and
like Elvis. Yeah,
York.
Of course it's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
And again, they deserve it, and they're great. And I have no problem with that. But so, yeah, I want to take some time off, and then I took the whole summer off. Not because I wanted to. I just didn't want to play any crappy comedy clubs anymore, and I wanted to just stay home, and it was great. I never wanted to go back and do this again, but because I needed the money and because I have to do something, and I'm not a big fan of acting. So, you know,
yeah.
I said, okay, let's go back and do it. And I started playing a few clubs, and it's great. Look, we're doing a Friday Night Lake show tonight. I'm not looking forward to that because you get a bunch of drunken fucking assholes who will die. But it only takes a three or four of those guys to ruin the show.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned Friday late shows. Isn't that why Steve Martin said he quit the business?
Was is that
Friday
what he said?
Late shows?
I think I read it somewhere. I think you're right, you know?
And you're not. Friday late shows are tough. I think tonight, if you're watching this, folks, let's make Friday's late show great.
Sometimes
that
great.
Would be funny.
You know, and Saturday early show is always great. Once in a while, those will be the bad ones. You never know when you're going to get a bad one.
Yeah.
And that just makes you go, I just don't want to do this shit anymore. But you know what? You know, it's... Like The Godfather, you know, it's, you know, Meyer Lansky's character. Who's the guy? Not Mo Green. I always forget.
The guy in Cuba. The guy in Cuba, right?
He played based on Meyer Lansky.
What was his name?
No,
it was a simple pensioner coming back
God
to America to live on
my
final days.
But again, no. Anyway,
shit.
It's a business we've chosen.
It's
you know?
A business we've chosen.
Yep.
You know?
Once you're in it, you're in it.
I'm going to look at my phone. And tell you. Anyway.
I think that it's very telling your attitude about it when you say, if I talk to young comics, I would just say don't do it. It's actually not the worst advice in the world.
Well, I mean, do it. I'm not going to discourage you, but I'm not going to encourage you. I'm not worried about you taking my job away, because by the time you make it, I'll be dead. So I don't care. If you want to be a stand-up comic, I think it's a great thing to try. I think it takes a lot of balls to get up there and do it, and it's for some people. And I mean, there are times I'm going, I can't believe I have the nerve and the ego and the balls to get up in front of all these people and make them laugh or try to make them laugh or think I can make them laugh.
It is kind of a height of hubris, really.
It's an odd thing to want to do. It's an odd thing to do, you know, but it's like being a Navy SEAL, you know?
Sure.
I mean, you know, something you think you want to do. But
it's
whether
for it's somebody.
Protect the country, put your life at risk, kill other people. Somebody's got to do it, and God knows it's great you do it. I'm not comparing stand-up comics to Navy SEALs.
No.
Our job is much harder.
When we agree.
Somebody heckles
yeah.
you can shoot them.
The
you have a license
point.
To kill.
Yes. You can kill them all sorts of ways.
Yes.
Yeah, they don't get heckled much at all.
Speaking of balls, I'd like to. I don't want to discuss
your
balls.
My sinuses are killing me. Good.
I don't
weather
want to discuss your balls, but you, sir, have an interesting. Stage persona where, in a way, I hate to use this term because it always goes back to wrestling with me, that in the world there's, you know, of wrestling, there's faces, the good guys, and there's the heel who's the bad guy. I think you kind of relish in being a bit of a heel when you're on stage. Am I wrong?
No. I nobody ever called me a heel or maybe a bit of a bully.
Right.
I think bully, yeah, heel, bully, yeah, which I don't think I'm like in real life.
Well, I don't think you are in any way either, but like I'm saying, in a way, you kind of take on a bit of a persona when you hit the stage. I think you're a little bit different on stage than you are off stage.
I think most comics are.
Yeah, yeah.
Although maybe not that much, because people I do say things. People go, and my girlfriend will say to me, or somebody said to me, you're not on stage right now. I'm not trying to be.
Right.
I wasn't trying to be funny. Is that a new bit? And sometimes, it will be. Or is that, what are you trying that out on me?
Right.
Yeah. My girlfriend, my late wife would do that too. What are you trying this out on me? Is that a new bit? Is that in your act? Am I going to be part of your act? My girlfriend's petrified. I didn't even finish that bit last night. I was talking about it last night. I went off on a tangent about something else. But my girlfriend is a very private person, and she does not like to be teased in public.
Uh-huh.
I think she made that quite clear. And she doesn't want to be part of my act. I have a couple of jokes about her, which makes it, look, you're dating a comic. You're going to... This is going to happen.
You're going to be in the crosshairs.
And, so she's very careful not to make any missteps and do anything stupid. I think she blows me more out of fear than love, because she knows that I have a lot of blowjob jokes, because my wife didn't blow me that often. So she blows me just to stay out of the act, which is fine. Because I know, I tell her, if she stops blowing me, she's going to see a fire and fury like this world has never seen. My Trump impression.
Holy shit, that's funny. So
my wife always tells me show's over.
At what point did you decide that you could just be kind of yourself, or go for that character, or the Pitbull character? How did you kind of like develop that and decide to run with it?
It just happened naturally. A lot of the anger I have in life, because I do hate people so much, just manifests itself on stage. It's just, I'm not going to walk around telling people when I'm on a plane, I hope you all die. Look at you, you fat fuck. And look at you eating KFC. And look at you. And, so I do it on stage.
Yeah.
I'm not going to walk around in real life, banging on the window of a Chinese guy going, how come you people can't drive?
Right.
Not because I'm afraid of getting killed, but there's no reason for me to do that.
Sure.
But on stage, there is. So I think it developed over the years of, being married so long and the airline travel and having a kid, playing horrible clubs, that I've become that character somewhat. It's just an extension of me,
Interesting.
Alice Cooper doesn't walk around being Alice Cooper, although he did for a while. Then he stopped drinking. But
I found Jesus.
Huh?
He found the Jesus, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, he's always a religious guy, but he brought himself to the brink. But my character's not like that. I think Sam Kennison is screaming. Sam was all like that. I didn't know him very well, but... And Jay Leno's character, Jay's pretty much like that. I don't think comics are like that all the time.
Right.
So the thing on stage basically happened when it became the Pitbull of comedy was when I was opening for a lot of rock bands in San Francisco back in the 80s. And that was a tough one. Robin Williams had started making it. Before Mork and Mindy, Robin was getting successful. So he wasn't opening for bands. It was me. And a guy named Dr. Gonzo and Kevin Pollak and Dana Carvey and a few other guys. But Dana and Pollak would always open up for Pablo Cruz and the Beach Boys. And and then when somebody a bit tougher came to town, like Warren Zevon or The Tubes, White Punks on Dub, I'd open up for those guys. And
I remember The Tubes, but did you open for Warren Zevon?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Nice guy, yeah. Yeah, I opened for a lot of people. Ray Charles, a lot of people.
No fooling. Interesting. So you're opening for, the lesser knowns, but still very good acts, and you're in front of these crowds that are coming to see music, and now you have to do comedy.
Yeah, it was really tough. But you know what? You make your $50, and it's like riding a mechanical bull. You're going to get thrown off. Just try to stay on long enough to get your $50 and not get hurt. It was just like that. It was never going to go well. But you know what? I had a name in the Bay Area in San Francisco, so I opened up for a lot of local bands, so the people that would come see... And a lot of bands you probably wouldn't even remember, the Rubidoux or the Tubes or Greg Kinn. Yeah, Eddie Money. I know Huey Lewis before they were really famous, but they were getting well known. I think they all had an album or two out. And so I'd open up for those guys. So their audience was a little bit older, in their 20s and 30s, like I was. Yeah. And they knew who I was from the radio, and they knew who I was from, they'd seen me before. So, I would do okay.
But did that recipe, a crowd there to see music, kind of fuel you to do that kind of aggressive style?
I think that's where it started. Yeah. And I opened up, and plus I did a lot of coke. Not my sinuses.
Okay.
I just stuffed up naturally. But
that'll probably do it.
Not a lot of coke, but enough where it would get, that and a couple of vodkas and get on stage and get all riled up. And I'm already a type A personality. So up there in front of the crowd, I think all those forces came together, with the coke. and not a lot of it. I wasn't sitting there doing like Scarface, sure. You know. But you know, a little lot of coke, a little vodka, you know. I'd have my jokes, I'd have my stuff, and I'd want to get them before they get me. It's kind of kill or be killed.
Get them before they get me.
You kill or be killed. Interesting. You know, it's like being in a battle.
Do you still think of it that way?
Sometimes, yeah. Friday Night Lake shows could happen.
Kill or be killed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the chapters of my book that I'll probably never finish. But it's kill or be killed up there. I've always looked at it that way. The thing about stand-up comedy, and you know this, is one thing. If I had to give people one bit of advice, and I never give advice, because I'm still working on this after 40 years, but the one piece of advice I would tell any comic or any speaker, they probably just don't show any fear. Once you show fear, the audience sees it, and they either, not that they'll attack you, but...
They tune out.
And it makes them very uncomfortable, you know? You know, there are a few comics I know that aren't great comics. I don't want to mention the names, but they sell out giant theaters, arenas. They're decent comics. But I think part of their appeal is they're so comfortable on stage, and they're so likable and lovable that people enjoy them. And I think when you go up there, you can't show any fear, because that will... It just makes things very uncomfortable. I can see when a comic is scared. You know, sometimes the audience can't see it. I can see it.
Yeah.
And there have been times where I've been a little nervous because, you know, things have turned the wrong way. And
you told me you never know what you're going to open with. Is that true?
Yeah, I told you that last night.
Yeah.
I have an idea, but I don't know. You know, if I'm... No, I don't know. I'm doing a private party next week, which I can't believe I took this gig for this amount of money, but... it's not a lot of money, but I said to do it. Private parties. It's a big party.
So I told you, you got to be at the house by
12. It's actually a big theater.
You'll get your 50.
It's actually, it's actually a big place with gambling tables and bands and DJs, and I'm going on right after dinner. And the guy that owns the company is a fan. He's going to bring me on. So, and he wants like 30 to 40 minutes, which can seem like a lot of... In a club, last night I didn't know how I was going to do 45. I did an hour. And, you know, because I'd worked for a while and it went fine. But when you do a private event, that can really get...
30 or 40.
Because they expect you to, like...
It's not good. Yeah, I can't believe I took the gig. So I'm a little nervous about that. And I will think of an opening and I'll have some notes and I'll try to follow them. And that'll be a tough one.
Viewer question for you. Has Bobby ever worked with Ralphie May? And what was it like? And who was his favorite comic to work with in the early 2000s? Interesting question, kind of dated, but lay it on us.
Well, you know, a lot of comics don't really work together because we're all headliners.
Sure.
But Ralphie May, I worked with a couple of times right before he passed away, actually. Ralphie, I love Ralphie. We worked at, there's a show in Montreal that I used to host called The Nasty Show. And every year, I'll probably go back and host it again if they ask me. But I hosted it for about 25 years.
And who books that?
It's at the Montreal Comedy Festival, which is the biggest festival in the world. And so they have all these different shows. They have like the ethnic show and the relationship show. They have all these big headliners. Kevin Hart would come in, or Jerry Seinfeld. And it's 2 weeks of comedy. And there's bookers and there's fans. Montreal's a great comedy town. So anyway, I would host a Nasty Show. And over the years, we'd have people like, you know, Joe Rogan, Louis C.K., and, you know, Robert Schimmel, and Otto and George, and then everybody that became too big or died.
Yeah.
So, but Ralphie did it a couple of times. The last couple of times he was there, the guy was getting so heavy and so big and eating just horrible food, and I was worried about him, you know? And, he, you know, we'd have to walk up the stairs from the dressing room to the stage, and Ralphie was in no shape to walk, and I was surprised he even lasted that long, you know? He just ate like a, you know, not good.
Didn't he had like a stomach stayed one too, didn't he?
I think he had something.
Rest
in peace, Ralphie May.
Speaking of starving, I'm starving right now. I'm so hungry. My stomach is rumbling.
Watch this. Ladies and gentlemen, you can see Bobby Slayton 4 more shows this weekend at Comedy at the Carlson. You get your tickets 585-4-COMEDY or visit carlsoncomedy.com. We're going to be... I'm going to be there.
That's right. You're working with me.
I'm working with you. And I am not quite too fat to get upstairs yet.
With you or against you?
You're not there. No, you're just a big guy. Ralphie May was obese. And you know, he was having trouble breathing. And you know, and I didn't want to lecture the guy. He knew he was fat. There's no other way to, you know. But he was such a good comic. And he went up there and just killed. I mean, there were some great comics on the bill. I see if Doug Stanhope did it a few years. You have a picture up there. The late, great Greg Giraldo, one of the greatest comics I've ever seen, he did it. Like I said, Schimmel did it a lot. Dom Herrera's done it. There's a million guys and a few women that have done it that were just mind-bogglingly funny. And then Ralphie would go up and follow everybody and just destroy. Nick DiPaolo would close the show and destroy. A guy from Canada, Mike Wilmot, would go. You know, the reason I was hosting the show, actually, the first year we did it, I didn't want to close the show. I didn't want to follow all these comics.
Right.
And I think the first year was, I don't even remember who did it, but like I said, I know Schimmel and Dom, a lot of great comics. Four or five guys on the bill. I go, well, I don't want to close the show. I'll host the show. So I became the host, which is difficult in its own way because you have to go on and do a few minutes between each comic and introduce each comic and remember what you did, what you didn't do. And we were doing two or three shows a night. But the other question, who do I like working with in the 2000s? Again, I haven't worked with many comics because, you know, I'm playing a club and, and a lot of guys who play the big theaters won't have me open for them because my act is so high energy. And they use comics that, you know, can open for people. I'm not an opening act.
You know, like Brian.
Yeah.
So, listen, Bobby, I'm going to ask you one more question. I'm going to let you go eat. Here it is.
I'm starving.
Real simple.
I can't get Wegmans out of my head right now.
You mentioned Netflix specials.
Yeah.
What are you watching? Who do you like? Can you name a couple that you're into right now? People that you like?
I can't watch many of them.
Oh, you don't?
The only reason I've never done one, they haven't asked me, but I don't really, you know, like the stuff I was doing last night, a lot of it's off the cuff, and a lot of it is, you know, variations of what I used to do. I haven't really written a lot of material in the last year. I was watching Rogan's special, which was great. I didn't finish it. And Adam Sandler's I started watching, which was so stupid but hysterical. So I got to finish watching that. I love Patton Oswalt. But I can't sit and watch most of it. Better Call Saul, I've been trying to get through for 5 years already. And I can't even make it through that.
Three seasons, 5 years.
You just remind me, I'm like six episodes.
How many seasons are there? Like seven seasons, right?
I think there's like three of them.
Three.
Better Call Saul's only three seasons?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the third one's just ending?
No, it's over. What an interesting way to end the show. Yeah. I think they just did third season. Maybe fourth, but not seven. No way seven.
Like really?
Yeah, I think the third one's ending. Yeah.
You know, it took me a little while to catch up with Breaking Bad. And that was such a great show that I try to binge watch it. But, you know, I have a bottle of wine with dinner, so by 8 o'clock I'm sleeping. I think it takes me about 4 days to watch one episode over and over again before I finally finish it.
Yeah.
So the Netflix specials, you know what, it's also depressing because some of the comics are really, really good, and some of them are so horrendous that it's hard for me to sit through those Netflix specials.
It does boggle my mind. But I guess what Netflix is trying to do is appeal to everybody and –
like,
some people like terrible comedy. I don't know.
It's
awful.
It's like watching someone do your job poorly, and I can't.
It's awful. And I know that they're selling more tickets than me, which doesn't – I'm happy for them. It doesn't piss me off, but it's amazing to me how much crappy shit is out there and how many good comics, you know, like good musicians, you know. And I look at hip-hop and rap and all the shit that's going on, and people have no idea who Nick Lowe or Graham Parker is, let alone Elvis Costello. I mean, there's so many great – musicians out there that have never made it past cult status, and there's so much crap out there, you know.
Yeah,
like it's funny. Is there
too much stuff?
There's too much stuff. There's too much garbage. You know, speaking of garbage, I will be at Comedy at the Carlson tonight and tomorrow.
Right in the dead.
Oh, my God. No, I'm just saying, like, maybe there is too much stuff. Maybe that there's 9,000 television channels producing stuff and 10,000 streaming services producing
stuff.
It
seems like there's, you know, but it's nice when people have choices. I just, you know, got a car the other day and I went to look at, you know, all the different cars, and there's so many variations of sports car and hatchback and SUV. Everybody makes this and, you know, so many options and phones. But I guess that's good. It makes everything just better when you have the competition.
Capitalism, it's finest, baby.
It's great.
All right. Bobby Slayton, ladies and gentlemen, our hero, the Pitbull.
Oh,
of
I know what I forgot to give you.
What is it?
I gave Walter Weiss. I had a Skechers, a shoe coupons for you.
You gave them all to Weiss?
Yeah.
The guy who needs shoes, huh?
Yeah.
I
give them to people on a show.
Because they need new shoes. They definitely do.
No, because I had a couple for you because I just did some commercials for Skechers. The best shoes ever, by the way. And I said, I got to go give Vinny, you know, not you, just Vinny.
Yeah.
I appreciate you thinking of me.
But,
That's a wonderful gift that you didn't give me. Thank you, though. And I appreciate the thought.
And I gave one to Wheels, the kid in the wheelchair, who doesn't even need shoes.
His feet still get cold.
He probably had the same pair of shoes as he was 11. What did he need shoes for? I mean, if I had a car dealership, I'd get him a deal on tires. I would have got him tired for his wheelchair, but I don't have any connections to that.
Wheels,
field.
You got my sneakers. I want them back. Yeah. Thank you. We'll see you next time. We're going to be right back with the news with Ross Johnson. Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit CarlsonCast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review.
All right, and we are back.
It is time for one of our favorite segments on the show. When comedy news breaks, Ross Johnson might see it on Google.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Maybe Twitter.
Our stand-up news guy, Ross Johnson. How are you, man?
Good morning.
We've missed you the last few weeks.
I have missed you guys. I've been freezing in the winter wonderland of Rochester. It's a nightmare. It's a terrible nightmare. Everyone go home. It's awful.
It's all right. Fine.
Well, this is weird.
It's fine. It's fine.
Can I slide in with some non-comedy related news before we start?
Sure. Go right ahead.
Avengers Endgame, they just announced. Breaking news!
Endgame is
the
name of it?
That's the official name, and they just dropped a trailer, which I did not watch.
Does it have an Avengers 4 trailer?
Uh-oh.
Yep.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
Let's just stop the show.
Oh, yeah.
Let's keep going. Keep moving.
All right, so...
it is comic news.
So first up, there was some big news Wednesday that dropped. The next host of the Oscars is going to be Mr. Kevin Hart. This is very exciting for Kevin Hart. We hope he does a great job.
I hope no one gives him away thinking he's a statue.
But wait.
Some more breaking news.
Oh, hold on. Something just came across the wires. So,
what happened?
So he was the Oscar host for about 24 hours. and he has, as of last evening, he dropped out of contention. He was announced on Wednesday. Thursday evening, he dropped out after some controversy regarding some things he has said and tweeted over the years about gay people in the gay community at large and things he would do to children if he found out they were gay. So he apparently, according to him,
he would make them laugh, right?
That's all he wants.
He would borrow their pants.
He would borrow their pants because they've got the best pants.
They would wear his clothes.
And he's a very small man.
According to him, he was asked to apologize by the Academy, and he said he didn't want to. So he's out. So that's an open gig if anybody's looking for a job.
Vinny.
Oh.
If Brian's Twitter wasn't so controversial, I'd say
it's true.
My Twitter doesn't. I'm not qualified for anything.
Okay.
There's no way. I couldn't get a job at Arby's if they looked at my Twitter.
I used to think that Ross wasn't qualified, but now you know. There's Brian. Brian's like, hold my beer.
I hear you can get in there and just delete things really fast, and then nobody will see them. I think that's the trick.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I guess that's what Kevin Hart was doing Wednesday afternoon. So this is because I was out last week, but this is still sort of current. So big news about the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which for the last 15 consecutive years has been hosted by a comedian. After last year's show with Michelle, where you'll remember Michelle Wolf was the host, generated some
controversy,
I guess you'd call it, mostly in that the president didn't like what she said because he thought she was mean. They will not be using comedians anymore. They've given up on that idea. Apparently, Michelle Wolf was just a bridge too far, and upsetting the president wasn't so good. He's not going anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
It's weird. He's not going.
It's almost like our president's a humorless fuckwit.
It's almost like that. It's almost like it's weird to give in to somebody who just doesn't like... When the whole point of the event is, hey, look, we in America, we can laugh at our president.
I'm not going to lie. If this was the... Hey, he beat Hillary real good party that they could all laugh about it. I'm sure he would be absolutely fine with it.
Fine with a comedian.
Yeah, he'd be fine with a comedian.
It's almost like he's not coming downstairs for like his own party.
It's almost like he's not coming downstairs.
It's a very solid point.
I'm not ready yet, point. Mom.
Tell them all to leave. I don't care.
But they're all going to laugh at me, Mom.
He's just standing at the top of the stairs in a bathrobe yelling at people to get out. So instead, presidential biographer Ron Chernow is going to preside, and that's going to be in April. So
sounds riveting.
Sounds super fun. So
to be fair, I heard he was an insult comic in the 80s. So this goes
it's
well.
Mostly about grammar, though.
So I don't know if anybody's checked his Twitter, but we'll find out. So Michelle Wolf says the White House correspondents. Michelle Wolf responded. She said the White House Correspondents Association are cowards. The media is complicit, and I couldn't be prouder. So
she killed it.
She destroyed.
Somebody
she
put a knife ended. In it. That's
yeah.
All right. So what else you got, Rosser?
Comedy favorite, beloved figure in the comedy community, Mr. Bill Cosby.
How's he doing?
Back in the news. He's doing great, apparently. So his longtime publicist.
Can he see again?
Where's he living now?
He's in a senior community of some kind, I believe. Yeah. So
it's a very metallic one.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They have matching uniforms.
Yeah.
but listen, so you know we pick on Bill Cosby because he's got a good sense of humor, but
because he's a shit person.
That's why, because you can take it.
Because he's a nightmare person, I think, is why we make fun of him.
The thing that. Parents dread and are terrified of when they take their little
him and
send
Trump,
their kids
that's
to college.
Why we get him.
They think of creeps like him.
Remember back in the day, Brian? Brian's old.
I remember when he was beloved. Yeah. Now he's the boogeyman.
So his longtime publicist Andrew Wyatt says the 81-year-old became concerned about obesity rates among the what he refers to as his fellow residents at the SCI Phoenix prison in Pennsylvania. So he's taken to counseling both inmates and guards on food and nutrition, as well as on how to stay out of trouble in general. So,
what a fucking ass.
Oh, my God.
He's always been an asshole. Like, he's always been a preachy asshole.
But just this,
so now
just
he
this
hates
rapey old man counseling people on how to be better.
Now he hates black
you
people
better
and
put
fat
back
people.
That piece of Jell-O, that cup of Jell-O, put that back.
The Jell-O was surprisingly low in the calories.
The best part is
put down the pudding, pick up the Jell-O.
Sugar-free Jell-O.
The best part, and do with this what you
give
will.
Give me the diabetes.
He's encouraging natural supplements, so he's strongly encouraging,
natural male enhancement.
He's strongly encouraging pills for people.
Yeah, so. He's done that for a long time, according to the news.
He's on brand. Say what you want about Bill Cosby. He's
what a lack of self-awareness.
He's a scoldy old creep who likes to give people pills.
I can't believe I didn't see that story. That's so annoying.
Yeah.
He's just in there telling people, you better eat better.
There was an SNL sketch a couple weeks ago where they did a joke about that. Like he went in and it was the guy's surprise cellmate was Bill Cosby. And he said, I'm going to coach the people on how to stay out of trouble. And it was like a joke.
Yeah. No, it's true. Such
shit. I know they say you're not supposed to take pills I give you.
He said, "I want to meet all the black, prisoners, and I want to tell them how to stay out of trouble and how to live their lives right." And Seth Meyers was said, "Yeah, I'd love to see that." And now he's doing it.
I feel like this would be a really, really, really interesting episode of Scared Straight.
Who the fuck's let him do this?
Do you think? So, like, I have a hard time. I guess I have a hard time with people being, just so blatantly. I mean, do you think he believes he's a good Like, do you think he's just playing a part 100% because he knows it's his only chance of getting any sort of
no?
I think he really believes
everything. His own brand.
Yeah.
I believe he believes it, and I also don't believe he believes what he actually did.
Yeah, like he doesn't see why it was bad. Or, like, he doesn't see why it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess is true with a lot of these rapey sort of guys.
Did you ever see that Larry King interview from, like, the 80s, early 90s he did?
I don't know.
There's an interview, if you go on YouTube, where he's talking to Larry King, and he's basically sitting there joking about Spanish Fly.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He did a bit about it.
And he's just like, put a little bit of that in your drink, and she's like, oh. And he's doing it on Larry King.
Mm-hmm.
That does not strike me as a man who thinks anything that he's doing is wrong.
No, that's a good point.
So, just saying.
Oh, man, it's still so depressing. I mean, it's worse for the It's worse for the women he's, you know, raped and assaulted than it is for me, who's sad because, like, I liked picture pages.
Now he's in prison giving TED Talks.
Yeah.
Realistically, in a world where they brought back Murphy Brown, where they brought back Roseanne, and they will continue to bring back these things, Keisha Knight Pullman, Malcolm Jamal Warner, Felicia Rashad are all going, motherfucker!
How mad would you be? I know. I'd be furious.
I'd just come back like Roseanne did without Bill.
That guy, what's his name, could stop stocking shelves. Owen could stop stocking shelves.
Oh,
ruined it all. All right, what else you got, Ross?
Okay, so wrap it up. This is my favorite one.
Oh, my God. I know that you show me what this is. I love this story.
This is so great. So, and I'm surprised this wasn't, this was something I had to dig for. This wasn't all over the place. So,
he literally digged for this, Brian. You'll find out why I said that.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is in the Visual Arts Building at the SUNY Purchase in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Local-ish. Yeah. There is. So if you go into a particular men's restroom.
Oh yeah.
And you pull out the, which I guess was until recently sort of unattached paper towel holder, you will find behind this wall a secret shrine to Danny DeVito. And what should be a horror movie scenario?
That is fantastic.
Because this is a horror movie scenario. Like, oh, in the bathroom, there's this secret, like.
You know what would make it a horror movie scenario? If it was actually him who put it all back there? That would make it really terrible.
That was some very stoned college student who had just watched Throw Mama from a Train.
So a Twitter user named Pisslord showed a video of the shrine.
nice wordy.
Accurate.
What, he's a wordsmith.
Another user named Slacker Duke. Also, those pictures, I believe, are from Slacker Duke. So DeVito himself has been invited to visit the shrine. There's a place to leave offerings, obviously, which people have done.
Yeah, it's called the stall.
there's a poster of Danny DeVito, so there's all kind of fun stuff back there. They've invited Danny DeVito to come, and he says, quote, "Your shrine honors me. My heart is filled with love and garbage. Tomorrow, as you may know, is my name day. Do something that makes you feel good. Above all, be kind to each other. Pick up trash, recycle, and be aware of plastics in the ocean."
Thanks, Danny.
A little farther.
But is it still? It's still there.
So,
you can still like access it.
So
or did they...
the most recent on the so they did invite Danny DeVito. The school was like, oh yeah, Danny DeVito, come. But I guess they've sort of blocked it off now. So I don't know if maybe you can get in if you've got a key or something. But they've sort of blocked. It's no longer. I guess this was sort of an open secret, and people were sort of pissed at Pisslord for sort of announcing this to the world because the school came and like sealed it off. But
right.
they're also saying he can come and visit. So I'm assuming they've got a way to get back in there.
They just have an old janitor just crowbar the thing off. All right, Mr. DeVito.
Does he have any connection to SUNY Purchase or just some stoner kid just picked that?
You know what? I don't know. I don't think anybody knows for sure because the pictures were from the people I mentioned, but I don't think anybody knows where this started.
So, it could have been there since the 80s.
There's a mystery.
It could have been there since Taxi.
My last home I lived in had a small shrine to Hugh Laurie that I don't know where it came from. So I think it just happens.
Interesting.
I think it just happens. These things just appear.
Yeah.
Circles. Just
yeah, like crop circles. Yeah. They just appear.
If you go to Comedy at the Carlson and you rip the paper dispenser off the wall, you'll see my... I love Anthony Michael Hall graffiti that I wrote behind it.
Now, nice. Now people are going to come and rip the dispenser off the wall.
It's not that bad.
Jesus.
It's not that bad.
Think before you speak, Vin.
Think before you pick a co-host. Ah! Thanks for watching the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. Great job, Ross.
Thank you, sir.
I really love that Danny DeVito story.
That's my favorite.
I actually said that to people this morning. I was like, did you know there's a secret stall? There's a secret Danny DeVito passage? Bobby Slayton, awesome. Thank you for having on. Make sure you follow him on... Instagram at official or Bobby Slayton official, and on Twitter at Pitbull of Comedy. Follow us, obviously, and leave a review. We'll see you next week with Josh Wolf. Thank you. Good night.